This is special programming from North State Public Radio. I'm Tess Vigeland. Tonight on After Paradise, it's been 35 days since the campfire started. With the city of Paradise wiped off the map, at least for the time being, Chico now finds itself contending with a sudden surge in population, using infrastructure that isn't prepared for the influx. There isn't enough housing. Roads are clogged with the new traffic. Anger spilled over at a city council meeting last night. We'll hear the latest and talk with Chico's new mayor, who's been in office for just over a week. Plus, a Paradise tradition moves to a new home. Despite the loss of their town, the Parrott Family Christmas Show will go on. We want to hear your comments and questions. Leave a message for us at 433-4887 or on our website, mynspr.org. For Thursday, December 13th, 2018, this is After Paradise. At the Chico City Council meeting last night, federal and state officials got an earful from local residents and politicians who say they're not being consulted on everything from where the debris from Paradise will go to where FEMA trailers will be sited.
I'm equally sorry to everybody in this room for all the people who are impacted in Paradise. But messing up my neighborhood, throwing my neighborhood under the bus, is not a good way to deal with other people who are broken and sorrowful. Okay? I want to know what decibel level the city ordinance commands, and I want to know what we do when the noise exceeds that. Am I going to call you? Who am I going to call? And what are you going to do about it?
Every single building company that's in Chico sits off the Skyway or Park Avenue. Why would you want to place people that are trying to rebuild clear across town to mitigate traffic instead of putting them near the services that they're gonna have to use every day? Because most people know, when you have a new house built, you have to go to the carpet guy, you have to go to the tile guy, you have to go to this, have to go that, back and forth.
My friends in Paradise who lost their homes would not want to wreck the livability of our neighborhood for their sakes.
You're dismantling and destroying our neighborhood in the process. You're treating us as collateral damage. We're expendable people. You're not really talking about the people in this neighborhood. You're talking about the site and the studies of the site. You need to look at us. We are people.
NSPR's Mark Albert was at the council meeting, and he joins us now. Mark, run us through the issues here. First, the site where the federal and state governments want to store debris from Paradise.
Well, it's actually not a storage site. It would be more of a transfer station. What they would do is take the debris that they remove from Paradise by truck and bring it somewhere else where they can sort and package it and move it out on rail cars. That would be destined for dumps either in California or elsewhere.
So where are they planning to put this, and what's the issue?
FEMA and Cal OES officials identified the long-abandoned Diamond Match Company site. It's been in existence for over 100 years, but has been abandoned for decades. There have long been plans to do something with the site. Federal officials say it's advantageous because it's quite close to Paradise, about 12 miles. It also has a rail spur, and it's also a large enough site where they can stage big semis off of the local streets. The neighbors, however, are infuriated. There have been long suspected that there's going to be some sort of dirty dealing with the development of that parcel, and there are major concerns about dust, noise, and traffic, as well as the potential environmental concerns from soil contamination or water contamination from dust. Now, officials claim that this is all going to be clean concrete and clean metal, that it won't be any contaminated debris, which will go to some other site. But the public's not particularly convinced.
All right. And the city council had something to say about this.
Well, the city council, like the public, was also not very pleased. This is Councilwoman Ann Schwab.
Find a site that you can operate 24/7 away from neighbors that are not going to bother anybody, and then you're going to meet your 12-month, 18-month obligation. You have to look at the survivors from Paradise, but you have to look at this woman in the eye and tell her the same story, that you are going to disrupt her life for 12 to 18 months, that she's not going to be able to sit in her living room and open up the windows of her windows and enjoy the springtime. You're going to take 18 months out of this neighborhood's life.
perhaps one of the most interesting things about the whole process last night is that all along, officials from FEMA and Cal OES have been saying that they're here to support the dictates or the wishes of the local community. We're only here to do whatever the locals want to do. But at the council meeting, local officials were basically saying this is a fait accompli.
All right. And the other issue it was touched on in some of the crowd comments that we heard earlier is that people are not particularly happy with where they're planning to put some of the temporary housing, including some of the FEMA trailers.
Well, yes. And authorities announced that there will house 250 families in manufactured homes on the north edge of Chico. This is off of Eaton Road near the Chico Airport. And it brought out dozens of people who had their own ideas, what they felt were better and more convenient for locals. But officials said that this is actually the closest large site that they have found to Paradise. If you were assigned to a trailer in Red Bluff, Oroville, or Gridley, you might find very little to complain about in terms of convenience if you were in North Chico.
All right. Well, clearly, Cal OES and FEMA coming under fire last night. What was the response?
Eric Lamoureux, an official with Cal OES, said there's a lot more to meet the eye and there's got to be compromises. If officials look for some other places to do this work that they deem as necessary, this debris sorting, it could delay things in Paradise and make people who are already striving to get home and already losing patients have to wait weeks, if not additional months.
I know a lot of folks want us to say we're not going to use the Barber site. And in order for myself and others to make that decision, I've got to look a disaster survivor in the eye, in some cases who haven't even been allowed to return to their home yet because it's not safe up there, and tell them, I'm sorry, it's going to be another 3 months before I even begin my cleanup operation. 2 to 3 months. Studies, and we will provide those studies, that we will put the mitigation measures in place that you demand. Now, that said, we will look for additional sites.
That was Eric Lamoureux of the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services.
All right, NSPR's Mark Albert joining us to talk about last night's city council meeting here in Chico. Mark, thank you.
Tess, thank you.
Chico Mayor Randall Stone has been in office for about 10 days. He's now among those frustrated with the lack of community input on these sites.
The mood in the room was exacerbation and an outright frustration and anger. What was happening was there were jurisdictions that were superseding, preempting the local government, and that exists in any environment. I mean, the federal government preempts the state government preempts the local government. But in this case, the federal government was moving and taking some action and moving in some direction that had not been approved by the residents of this community. And so I called a special meeting with staff because we didn't want to wait on this until December 18th, our next regularly scheduled council meeting, which is, again, in a few days. So we held a special meeting. This was not an action item. The city council did not have any jurisdiction or authority to take any action. What we wanted to do was make sure that the FEMA and Cal OES were present in the room so that the residents and participants and community members in the city of Chico were able to convey their concerns about the direction that FEMA and Cal OES were removing, with specific regard to the Barber Yard neighborhood. So there was already, before we walked in the door, a significant level of distrust and anger and frustration. So that existed before we unlocked the doors last night.
So what is the message to FEMA and Cal OES at this point?
Cal OES and FEMA absolutely need to take into consideration the neighbors and the neighborhood when they're planning these types of actions. If you look at the way we typically do things in the city of Chico, nay, any community in California, you have staff reports that are extensive. There's environmental impact reports. There's neighborhood meetings with residents when you're trying to propose something like this, understanding that this is a major disaster and that we've got to jump through red tape and hoops much faster than normal. But part of those jumping through the hoops is not ignoring what what the concerns of the neighborhood are. And that's kind of the way it felt going in. We were able to relay a lot of that those concerns that the neighbors had last night at the council meeting, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to translate to a shifted development environment. So we're concerned, and that was a lot of frustration and anger from our community members, and it was shared by just about every member of the council.
Let's talk a little bit about the Barber area and the Diamond Match factory. Clearly, FEMA thought that this was an option for them, and I assume that they've been looking all over the area. What kind of issues do you think that they're going to run into as they try to find somewhere to put, at least temporarily, all of the debris that is going to be coming down from Paradise?
We've got millions and millions of tons of debris and somewhere between 2,300 households that we're going to have to provide housing for, as well as between 13 and 16,000 households that are being displaced. So the types of things that you deal with are dust, debris, waste hauling, toxics, all of that crammed into a residential neighborhood while we're passing their proposal is to pass through that residential neighborhood and to not have any sheltering units, or when I say sheltering units, I mean for fugitive dust. We're talking about an enclosed space that when you're crushing concrete or shredding metal, that one, you're cutting down on noise and aerated debris, and when you're in a residential neighborhood that's as dense as Barber Yard, you can expect that that we're going to have some concerns, and that's the environment that they're working in. FEMA is still continuing with their plan to utilize that site. That doesn't mean that they're done discussing mitigations, but they told us last night that they are going to continue ahead with the plans to use the Barber Yard and Diamond Match property for the cleanup and extrication of debris.
Can they do that without okay from you?
Well, again, they preempt us. So, yes, the federal government is capable and able to ignore the state and local governments. That doesn't usually bode well, and I highly doubt that they will be that disrespectful, but they can choose a site and override us, and that's literally what they did last night.
Mayor Stone, can you talk a little bit about some of the other complications that the city of Chico is going to be dealing with for probably a long time to come, which is once there is housing, if there is housing for all of the folks who have lost their homes in Paradise, traffic is affected, schools are affected. What do the people of Chico need to start preparing themselves for over the long haul?
The economics of this thing are unimaginable. I'm in tune and we're aware of how devastating this is and the amount of change that this community is going to need to go through between now and 3 years from now, and as a secondary phase, really 7 more years, so a total of 10 years. You know, we're already seeing the impacts like traffic. It feels like the streets are overloaded, and we need traffic mitigations immediately to address that. There's capital coming in to help us address that in reasonably large measure, but that means that there's going to be dust, and I'm not talking about the dust coming down from Paradise. I mean, we're going to be under construction for the next solid 3 years, and that's difficult, but the alternative is far worse, which is when you don't have dust and construction and growth, when you leave it to atrophy. We've got a long road ahead of us. The next 6 months and 3 years inclusive are going to be the most challenging, and we need the community to tolerate that traffic, those mitigations, and those impacts. But we also need to have mitigations.
Mayor Stone, thank you for being with us.
No problem. Thank you very much.
About 2 miles away from the city council meeting last night, the Unitarian Universalist Church held a small memorial service for victims of the campfire. They invited those who'd lived through it to share their stories. Reverend Brian Plude began the service with an invocation.
We gather to remember. We gather to remember the 86 who have been lost, who lost their lives in the campfire. We gather to remember the town of Paradise that was, and give hope to the town of Paradise that will be. We gather to hold each other in compassion and love. We gather as community. Amen.
We really didn't think it would come as far down as it did. And I guess we probably held out longer than anybody and even didn't even prepare as we were holding out. I used to volunteer on Tuesdays and Thursdays at the Episcopal Church up there, and they served lunch to people in the community and to the homeless. And there's lots of homeless there were up there and down here also. And I volunteered back in the clothes closet, and I had people that I would put stuff back for. One man, he'd just come in for one pair of socks a week, and I always made sure I had a pair of socks to give to him. And there were women that just wanted certain things just once or twice a week. And I truly miss that. We don't plan to rebuild, and I don't want to go back. I guess we'll go see what's left. But I'm very thankful that all of us that were up there, whether we went to this church or any other church, or they didn't go to church, that as many of them that got out did get out.
Ruby and I had a beautiful life in Paradise, and we still have a beautiful life, and we're grateful to have each other. I want to lift up the emergency personnel, CAL FIRE and the Highway Patrol. Yes, indeed. The fact that only 85, 86 people lost their lives is a miracle. There were just so many stories to be told, and there's a lot of grief and heartache, but I believe in my heart of hearts that Paradise will be rebuilt. It is worth crying about, but also there's joy ahead, joy to be had, and I'll miss that red clay soil. It was really important to me. And the bird song and the trees. When we first moved up there, they wanted to take out a tree, and I said, that tree's 100 years old. I can't take that tree out. I'll be interested to see how those trees are faring when we go back up for one final time. Thank you.
That was Reverend Brian Plude, Ruby Grace Smith of Paradise, and Bob Hood of Paradise, speaking last night at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Chico. You're listening to After Paradise, a special production from North State Public Radio. We'll have more just ahead. This is After Paradise, a special program on the aftermath of the campfire from North State Public Radio. I'm Tess Vigeland. If you lived in Paradise any time over the last 25 years or so, you likely know the Parrott family. For one, the family patriarch, Harvey Parrott, was a dentist in town for 30 years until he retired about a decade ago. But beyond that, you'd know them as a family variety show. Parrott Family Christmas Show began in a church and after several years moved into the Paradise Performing Arts Center. This year, things are, of course, different. But despite everything that's happened to their hometown, the show will go on. We'll get to those details in a bit. I spoke with Harvey Parrott's daughter, Bryn Parrott Chatfield, earlier this week in our studios. She brought along her daughters, 12-year-old Mikkel and 8-year-old Eileen, plus last year's concert video.
We would do it at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, mm-hmm. and we would have about 300 to 400 people come every year. And we, for years, I was really embarrassed that people would show up. We would kind of practice for 2 weeks before the program, and we would play the handbells and the hand chimes. And then we found an instrument called the boom whacker, which is hilarious.
What is that?
It's like a
picture?
I don't. It's like a wrapping paper tube that makes noise.
Okay, so you're a little embarrassed at that point, but
I was, and I kept thinking, why are these people coming to this show? And there's five children, and then as we started having children, the program kind of evolved and got bigger and bigger.
Let it be Christmas everywhere, in the songs that we sing and the gifts that we bring, Christmas everywhere.
And then about 12 years ago, my dad said, I have somebody that wants to pay for us to play at the Paradise Performing Arts Center. And I told my dad that it was a terrible idea. But since they paid for my education, I decided.
I owe you, Dad.
Exactly. So I decided that we could take it on. So our little beast has turned into a big beast, a big, beautiful Christmas variety show kind of centered on the handbells. And it's just gotten bigger and better every year. And about 7 years ago, I saw a video of it and I thought, this is actually pretty good. So instead of being embarrassed that people were there, I started inviting just random people that I'd see, knowing that they would love it.
How many of you family members are now involved?
This year, there's 11 of us. We've had as little as 9, and we've had as many as 22.
22?
Yeah.
Mikkel, when did you start participating in the concert?
Well, I was on stage when I was a baby, but I think I started singing when I was 2 or 3.
Do you remember that?
No. I sang with my cousin 1 year, and I had just turned 3.
Okay. And so what do you do now?
I sing, I play the guitar, I play the ukulele, and I play the bells and the boomwhackers.
What does this concert mean to you?
Well, I think it's a family tradition that we need to keep going, and kind of don't want to do it this year, but I'm really glad that we are doing it.
Yeah. Eileen, how about you? What's your role in the concert?
I don't know.
No?
Do you sing?
Yeah.
You sing?
I play the boomwhackers and the bells.
What's your favorite part of the concert?
When we do the family joining thing.
It's when Granddad introduces the entire family. So everybody goes on stage together and he introduces who's performing that year.
Okay. So this has clearly become a major event for the citizens of Paradise and the surrounding community. What happened this year?
Well, Paradise burned.
Yeah.
And we've all been evacuated. My parents lost their home, and 3 of my brothers have lost their homes, and we lost our home. The Paradise Performing Arts Center is actually still standing, but we can't use it. And after the fires, it was hard to give up something that was so big for our family and something that we felt that the community needed and cherished. In the past, we've had about 1,200 people come and see the show, and it's a big part of their Christmas tradition. This year, we wanted to give back again. We felt it was more important than ever this year that we bring Paradise back together, that we celebrate Christmas with them, that we celebrate our love for them, thank people for what they've done for our family and for Paradise.
with so many of you losing your homes, where are you living? How are you getting through?
We're making it one day at a time. We've been living between Chico with some friends and then a cabin up in Truckee and kind of going back and forth. Some days we're just, we take it hour by hour. This Christmas program is a big undertaking. The only thing that we got out of the fire for this program is a 1-inch binder of accompaniment music. And then we have 3 wreaths that were actually stored at the Paradise Performing Arts Center. And everything else has to be new. And we're talking about shirts, hair pieces, musical instruments. We lost our chimes. We lost our boomwhackers. Thankfully that my brother owns his bells and he's up in Portland. We lost our piano. So we're building this program from a 1-inch binder.
How did that survive?
As we were evacuating, my parents live really close to us, and I felt like I should just run down and grab the binder. Like most people would say, we really all thought we were going home. We weren't really worried about it. I wasn't, and I think it might have been because of where I live. I couldn't see what was going on.
Then what does this new Parrot Family Christmas, what does it mean for you and your family?
I think it's always been a way for us to serve the community, and I think more than ever, it's a way to serve and thank people. And I think that's why it's so important to me this year, is I feel that everybody needs it more than ever.
Well, I'm sure the community is incredibly grateful that they'll be able to have this tradition when so many traditions are not going to happen this year. Any chance I can get a preview from you guys?
Yeah, we can sing for them.
Okay,
we'll just sing.
Let's move the mics a little bit.
One part. Okay, we'll do the first verse. You guys sing the first verse, mm-hmm. and then I'll sing the chorus with you guys.
Okay. I'd sing you a song, baby Jesus. I'd kneel at the side of your bed. If I were a child in Bethlehem town, I would cradle your sleepy head. I'd sing you a song, baby Jesus.
Divine, let me
I'd kneel at the side of your bed. If I were a child in Bethlehem town, I would cradle your sleepy head.
Bryn Parrott Chatfield with her daughters Mikkel and Eily. The Parrott Family Christmas Show will be performed a week from Saturday, December 22nd at 2:30 p.m. and again at 7 p.m. at the Center for the Arts at Pleasant Valley High School here in Chico. All proceeds will go to help campfire victims. And that is our program for Thursday, December 13th, 2018, 35 days since the fire started. We're produced by Sarah Bohannon, Mark Albert, and Phil Wilkie. Adam Ragusea composed our theme music. Special thanks to Matt Fiddler. Tomorrow, the mayor of Paradise talks about what comes next for her city. Thanks for being with us. I'm Tess Vigeland, and this is After Paradise from North State Public Radio.